This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Hey, everyone. It's Estelle Herndon, political reporter for The New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way that doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent. I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what The New York Times has been doing for more than a century. And that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to The New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Let's get it cracking. Welcome to Popcast Deluxe. You are Grimachi, Medusa heads on me like I'm Illuminati of Weekly Cultural Review. I'm John Caramonica.
I'm Joe Coscarelli.
Popcast Deluxe, spinoff of Popcast OG, original edition, nytimes.com/popcast for all the episodes. Every week we're here on YouTube talking music and the greater cultural universe that's connected to it. That's TikTok, television, film, etc. We kind of have a big week. This is a big week for our particular sweet spots,
yes.
Right? So let's run it down a little bit. New Olivia Rodrigo single. It's called Vampire. Heavy in the streets. We're going to get into it in the backstory and the meta story. What else we got?
We got a little bit of meme economy.
Woo.
Emphasis on economy. We're going to talk a little bit about Grimace. Happy birthday, Grimace.
Happy birthday, Grimace.
We're going to talk about Barbie and Oppenheimer and what it means to do free labor for multinational corporations.
What about just like not adequately paid labor? Forget free, like okay. Both.
Yeah, both.
Yeah, okay. We're going to talk about the
Fallout Boy.
We'll just get to it when we get to it. It's like, if you know, you know, but we'll just get to it when we get to it. But I just feel like let's get to the money.
Yeah.
Let's get to the money right
Olivia's
away.
Olivia's back.
Olivia's back. This is Vampire. What part of Vampire you want to play?
The thing about Vampire is that it's three songs.
Yeah, it's tripartite.
Yeah, three songs in one. It starts with a piano ballad. Let's do that moment where it becomes not a piano ballad.
With narrative import, I would say. So yeah, all right. So this is like a minute in, minute and a half. We're shifting from, frankly, driver's license, Olivia, into something quite different.
Every girl I ever talked to told me you were bad, bad news. You called them crazy. God, I hate the way I called them crazy too. You're so convincing. How do you lie without flinching?
Okay, so as we were saying, this song is three songs, sort of, three sections, three different musical approaches. That said, one thing about Olivia, and I want to lead by saying I think this is a very good song. This is a smart and savvy comeback record, comeback from quiet, not comeback from disappearance, but comeback from a quiet, a fallow period.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it. I mean, Olivia Rodrigo is very much in the present, but it's been 12 months since we've heard from her, which in this particular cultural moment seems like a long time. So Olivia's back. This feels like a very deliberate bridge from Driver's License Olivia, from first album Olivia, to something that might come next. Really, really savvy in construction. I will say, unlike what we were talking about last week, we're talking about metapop and innovation and progressive. That's not exactly what Olivia is here to do. She's not genre style. She's not playful in those regards. She's here to hit you with raw lyrics. She's here to hit you with powerful singing. She's here to hit you with something very unvarnished. And that is all that is on Vampire.
And storytelling.
Absolutely.
She's a sort of an old school pop star in that sense. And she's very much a student of
Taylor,
the recent faves.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift and Lorde are the main two touchstones, I think, for me. And that continues from Sour, the first album, and Driver's License, the world beating debut-ish single. I do want to talk about All I Want, which is the High School Musical Olivia Rodrigo single, which I think like there's a little bit of
that on this.
Yeah. This reminded me a little bit of All I Want. Speak the initial on that. Piano. I mean, just the belting.
And I miss the days when I was young and naive. I thought the perfect guy would come and find me. Now happy ever after, it don't come so easily. All I want is love that lasts.
It's really her at a piano. The first minute of this song had me thinking of that pre-fame, pre-mainstream fame version of Olivia Rodrigo, who was a performer, and a child star.
And also, I mean, if we go to the original TikTok for Driver's License, you know, this is, there's no guarantees on that TikTok. It's her hunched, you know, hunched over, playing a thing. Olivia maintaining a connection to that version of herself is, I think, narratively important for her career and also for fan connection. I think that actually goes a long way.
And there's something classic sounding about the way this record was recorded when it starts. I don't know if it was in fact, but it sounds analog, like it sounds to tape almost.
Interesting.
And then, of course, as it builds and builds and builds and all these little electronic parts are being added, it shifts. And I do feel like this song is more dynamic than most of the stuff on the last album. I think Driver's License had a lot of dynamics itself, but the rest of the album, you know, was a bit more straightforward or less precious, less intricate than the production on Driver's License. She's back, of course, working with Dan Nigro, her go-to collaborator thus far in her career. And I think, yeah, they're building on their sound, but they're not switching it up just yet.
Yeah, I think probably the worst thing that Olivia could do in this moment is put out a record that radically realigns what's expected of her. And we talk about this with other pop stars. We talk about this with Taylor, the Reputation era. You know, this took every four episodes, we're going to have to talk about Reputation probably. But you know,
1989 before it.
Sure. But like to me, the struggle that Taylor always had in that era, Reputation's an album I love a lot. It's a great album. I don't know if it's a great Taylor Swift album. You have to like walk your people along as you're changing. And I do think Taylor lost people during that era, not me, but others. I think Olivia is still early enough in her career where she's walking people with her. And I think she's going to want to do, and especially having seen her on tour, I know there's a little bit more of a rock edge. There's a little bit more of like a heavy performative side to her. I know that's probably like around the corner, but you can't, I mean, you can, but it's a harder thing to do to radically shift right now.
The rock and roll is missing on this, which
absolutely
the pop punk that she brought on Sour, I specifically remember seeing her on tour at Radio City, and she opens with Brutal, the opening track on her debut album. And it's a sort of cheerleader theme throw, like Nirvana throwback, basically. It's very Smells Like Teen Spirit. And it's almost
or
like
Riot Girl. Jason.
I was going to say yeah. It's pop, but it's Riot Girl. And yeah. Of course, Smells Like Teen Spirit, also influenced by Riot Girl, named by Kathleen Hanna, et cetera, et cetera. And that version of Olivia, that pop punkness, which again, who knows what this album is going to sound like. She has announced her sophomore album, Guts, coming out in September. This is the first taste of it, but I thought it was interesting that this stayed pretty firmly in the Driver's License and All I Want lane and didn't lean into that guitar sound, which has become even more popular and centered in the music mainstream since she jumped on the trend.
But this does to me really feel hand-holdy. Like, let me guide you. Let me walk you somewhere. And even the progress of the record itself, it's in three parts. It doesn't stay in that first mode. It moves through different modes. And I wonder if where it drops you off at the end of the song is actually what's going to come on the album.
I think you're right, because it ends with a real outro, a sort of like old school outro, and it has a harsh stop. It builds again once it finishes, and then it hits the brakes, and you just know whatever the track transition there is going to be, I think, major. We've gone this far without talking about the lyrics and the story. Obviously, Olivia Rodrigo got famous, took over the world 1 week in January 2021 with a breakup anthem. Crying because you weren't around. And a breakup anthem in which people very quickly put the pieces together based on her Disney Channel fame and alleged relationships. This is a teenager we're talking about.
Yeah, so we just want to tread carefully.
Yeah.
But if you were paying attention, you know what the backstory is and also what followed from it, which were answer songs and kind of a number of gossip blogs. It actually, that moment, I remember, was the first time in a while I had felt like we were sort of back in a prime Us Weekly kind of moment.
I knew you were going there.
Thank you. I appreciate that. The one thing I like about Joe is he knows my moves before I make them. But to me, I remember thinking like the era of internet celebrity and gossip blogs and whatever had gotten predictable and trite, and it didn't feel kind of like classic. And there was something kind of like old Coke, classic Coke about that particular gossip circle.
Yet another topic we can't escape without mentioning Taylor Swift, and the fact that who each song was about was a huge part of her rise, to the point where she was telegraphing it through codes in the liner notes.
Yeah.
So that obviously happened to Olivia as well. The success of Driver's License, as amazing of a composition as it is inextricable from the tabloid side of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Here we are with Vampire. The lyrics are pointed.
Yeah.
Sharp. Okay. Brutal.
Whoever's on the other side of this, and we can talk about that. This is gonna be a tough week for that person.
Yeah. Are they locking down the comments?
Look, this is a spoiler podcast, but it's maybe not a speculative podcast, but you can say that Olivia has been in a couple of relationships that have been high-ish profile. There is Zach Bia. Zach Bia is a Los Angeles nightlife figure, friend of Drake, now currently a DJ and record producer. They had a relationship, or allegedly, everything in this section, allegedly. That's a person who has been believed to be in a relationship with Olivia Rodrigo.
Look at you, cool guy. So that's like, you know, that's pretty early in this song. You know, again, nightlife figure.
Mm-hmm. You only she come out seems, at night.
She yep. seems to be painting this figure. She seems to be painting this character who is older than her, who only comes out at night, who only cares about status.
Being proximate to fame.
And I mean,
can I just say the word and hope that Leslie bleeps me?
Yeah, I mean, we have to say, and I think it's also important to the artist that Olivia is, which she came out of the gate cursing. That was not something that teen pop stars have always done.
No, this was like a long thing with Taylor, where I remember the first time Taylor cursed on a record, and I'm not going to remember what that is now, but I remember listening about it. Because yeah. It was on album.
And it took a while to get to the F word, yeah. Even from some of the lesser curses.
But there is cursing on the first Olivia album, and there is, I'm just going to say it.
Yep.
Fame f***er. Great word.
Fame f***er, incredible phrase. The couplet is bloodsucker, mm-hmm. Fame f***er. As we all know, the go-to idiom is star f***er. So to flip that on its head and take what is essentially a cliche and make it...
Renew it
and make it one notch better. Yeah. And also, it's very evocative writing. It's like, it's not even the star that you care about.
It's the state of being. It's really good.
The first time I heard it, I was like...
Yeah. No, knocked me out. It knocked me out.
Because vampire... Like,
it really knocked me out.
Vampire, bloodsucker. Okay.
That's easy.
Easy. And the song could flow from there and just go safe.
Lean
with the metaphors.
In on that imagery.
Yes.
You can lean in on that imagery.
Yes.
No, I agree with that. The thing that is, there's a real present aspect to Olivia's songwriting. And I don't mean present like it's happening right now. I mean like emotionally present, vulnerable, and visible, the way that she writes music. And so when I hear this song, I'm hearing, obviously she's worked with this over 100 times, but it still has that texture of fresh, I mean, dare I say fresh tears, still has that texture to it. And that's a hugely impressive feat. It's impressive on Driver's License. It was impressive on the rest of Sour. It's impressive on this. And that's something that I don't actually think anybody working in the pop mainstream really does as well as she does right now.
Yeah. I mean, some of the imagery and phrasing here and the subject she's tackling, she fits a lot in. Like there's the, you know, the slyly sort of feminist part where she's, you know, she's talking about how he said his exes were crazy and she regrets how she said they were crazy too. That's like something we've heard a lot in pop music as it's gotten more feminist,
yeah,
frankly.
Sure.
But she puts her own little spin on it, the way she phrases it. You know, the idea of her own vulnerability, like, I used to think I was smart, but you made me feel so naive. Like, there's just,
really good.
There's a real economy of language and, yeah, just a real preternatural sophistication and maturity for such a young songwriter.
The song it reminds me the most of is Dear John. This is Taylor Swift.
Long were the nights when my days once revolved around you. Sing the footsteps, praying the floor won't fall through again.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece, and in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
This is A.O. Scott. I'm a critic at The New York Times. What I do and what the other critics here do is part of the same project that all of the journalists at the New York Times work on every day, to give you clarity and perspective, and above all, a deeper understanding of the world. When you subscribe to the New York Times, it's not just here are the headlines, but here's the way everything fits together. If you'd like to subscribe, please go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
And I've been thinking a lot about the shifts in narrative perspective between the Dear John era and this. And there's a, like almost like a tisk tisk in Dear John. There's something more caustic here, something more confident and more kind of like.
Okay. I don't know if I feel like this is more caustic, but I do think it is important that both are about older men specifically.
Of course. But I feel like there's something about the tone. There's a sturdiness. Olivia is standing on a sturdiness of a platform, a musical platform that she has made. The punchline, of course, with Dear John is the song structure.
It's done in the style of John Mayer.
Allegedly. Allegedly.
But not that allegedly. Yeah. It's in the title.
Right, but allegedly. But it's done in the style. So it's like a little bit of like, it's a wink and a nod, but it's not a Taylor song in the purest sense. It's Taylor doing something. This is Olivia doing an Olivia song. There's something a little sturdier, I think, in the psychology of it.
Huh. You're not saying it's better than Dear John. It's,
I mean, that's
right
hard
away.
To say. No.
We've Dear lived John with is, Dear John for so long.
And Dear John
point.
Is not only one of my favorite Taylor songs of all time, it's one of my favorite songs of all time.
Something we have in common.
Just an astonishing record.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'll never forget the pure electricity of hearing Dear John for the first time. I mean, truly, truly unsettling.
We've said this before, but it's the real All Too Well.
Yeah.
It's the thinking man's All Too
Absolutely
Well.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. Taylor's bringing it back. to me, the acuity in that song and the acuity in this song, so pointed, so intense, so invigorating as a listener to really hear someone be that present in their both anxiety, but also kind of like judgment. Really, really impressive.
So it's now July. Guts is not coming out until September. What are your hopes for this record? What do you think Olivia's career progress is going to be on this sophomore album, especially in a time where we haven't really had a new pop star of Olivia Rodrigo's caliber since her?
Well, I think this is where it's important for us to talk about what style of pop star is Olivia Rodrigo. Let's talk about other contemporary styles of pop stars. Dua Lipa, we mentioned last week, doing sort of like very, very, very tightly stitched genre work.
Yeah.
It's big work. It's big pop work, but it's genre work nonetheless.
And it's machine shined.
Very much so. You have someone like Lorde. Now, Lorde is a bit of a wild card, but broadly speaking, Lorde is moving in darker, more emotional, and loosely avant-garde directions. You've got Billie Eilish, who's doing pop goth, right? And then you have Taylor, who's still doing pretty centrist stuff. What else? Rihanna?
Sure.
Doing dance-oriented stuff?
Doing music?
Okay, unclear. Unclear. A lot of what's happening at the center of, like, the pop charts right now actually has nothing to do with pop music. It's SZA, it's Morgan Wallen, it's stuff like this. To me, Olivia isn't doing any of the things that those people are doing, nor should she. When I was saying before that I don't find her to be a stylistic innovator, I don't mean that as a negative thing. I think her strong suit, piano, heartache, and pop punk was a really, really interesting vehicle, and I think she could still access that vehicle. But I'd be surprised if she went in a direction that was like heavy, heavy genre influence, collaborating outside of the central group. That would be surprising to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important that the album that she made last time and seemingly what is being telegraphed for this one as well is it's a very bespoke product. It's her and one co-writer and producer. Taylor has done some version of that. Lorde has done some version of that, both with the same man. Dan Nigro is not Jack Antonoff, which...
Yet.
Yeah. I guess I just wonder if there will be any swerves on this album. Like you said, is this just a bridge to a new sound, or will it be the same little parts? And it's true that she takes from the people you mentioned, she takes little things like Driver's License has the Lorde backup vocals, and so does this, the sort of stacked, you know, going back to Pure Heroine, Lorde and Royals, obviously her big breakout. So yeah, I guess I just wonder what other tricks she has in her bag, or if she needs more for this album to be successful.
I don't think she needs more for this album to be successful. But I think what's happening now is like Olivia Rodrigo fandom is like still a little bit out here right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as focused as it was 12 months ago. It's a little bit in the skies. Got to gather all that up, bring it back, consolidate it, tighten it, and then build upon that. And frankly, she has some living to do. Like if these lyrics are any indication, she's been going through it.
Yes. She's done some of that living.
Yeah. And now she's got stuff to write about. I mean, not to be trite about it, but it's like you do some living, you go through some things, you have songs to write. I would be, if she had come back much faster with less to say, that to me would have been more of a liability. The fact that it took a little bit of time, and it's weird that we're talking about this being a long time when people like Adele take multiple years.
It's a normal
years,
amount of time, you know, even in the old model of pop stardom.
Yes, but like in the sort of like hyper-present mode, it's a little bit tough. But I feel like this is a good time frame for a comeback. It's a good time frame to come back and say, I'm going to remind you of why you liked me in the first place. And on top of that, I'm building on it, but I'm not jumping away from it. I'm not abandoning you. That's how it feels to me.
The other thing about Sour was that it had a really long shelf life.
Like, oh, yeah.
You think of Driver's License as the meteor, But there was also Good For You and Deja Vu, which I think is, Deja Vu is probably actually my favorite Olivia Rodrigo single. So I wonder if she'll hit us with another even before the album, given how long that gap is.
Yeah, it seems unlikely to just do once. I mean, this is a long summer. It's a long summer.
It's a long summer.
Hot summer.
It's a hot summer.
It seems unlikely that this is the only thing we're going to get from her. But on, I do think we are in, generally speaking, a drought of pop stars, not people who are popular, but pop stars. And the amount that's riding on this, I mean, not to be like, oh, so much is riding on Olivia, but like, real talk. There were people who came after Olivia Rodrigo who were kind of doing Monkey Olivia Rodrigo. That was a moment last year.
You want to name names?
No, they know who they are. You know who you are. We know who you are. And nothing against those people.
Yeah.
But like, it was very clear that someone saw a lane, said, I'm going to run through that lane, or multiple people, or multiple record labels.
Which happened after Lorde and happened after Billie Eilish.
Always going to be the case. Olivia is the innovator in this space. Should we just talk a little bit about the Taylor-Olivia dynamic?
I think
because,
we have
like,
to.
It's not been clean, kosher.
Yeah, Taylor has opened her arms to a lot of female musicians over the course of her career, and especially of late on this tour. Boy Genius popped in a little bit. The alleged subject of Driver's License.
Yes.
The alleged other woman in Driver's License. Sabrina Carpenter opened a couple of dates on the Eras Tour. Things have not been totally rosy between Taylor and Olivia, even though Olivia came into the game as a professed fan and student of Taylor.
I mean, I don't know if we'll ever know the full truth, but it does seem that from a power dynamic perspective, like a lot of the people that you mentioned that Taylor embraces are kind of indisputably like this. Mm. They are not direct threats. Olivia is the first direct threat. And I think to come in the game saying,
you don't think Lorde was a direct threat?
The music was too idiosyncratic, I think. Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it was like a baseball player embracing a hockey player or something, you know? Okay. Sorry, that's my sports for the day.
Love it.
Yeah, but you know,
that doesn't happen. No, baseball players and hockey
that's
players.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's just fine. But like that to me is what that was. It was kind of like acknowledging a great in another field.
Right.
Whereas Olivia is like a little too on the nose, especially for contemporary Taylor. Maybe like country Taylor, quote unquote, maybe would have felt differently. But contemporary Taylor, it's a little bit on the nose.
Yeah. And so Olivia Rodrigo on Sour had one direct Taylor Swift reference. One step forward, three steps back, uses piano part from New Year's Day, the Taylor Swift song. Then after that, Taylor and Jack Antonoff were later given writing credits on Deja Vu, whose bridge was inspired by Cruel Summer.
And also inspired by every kid at a playground shouting.
But Olivia had specifically been covering Cruel Summer online prior to
that. Sure, but like you and me too, girl. Like,
I'm just saying, this happened a couple times on the Olivia Rodrigo album.
It also Paramore.
Paramore and Good For You. And Olivia, she responded to it at one point. I think she gave an interview to Time and she said, it was really frustrating to see people discredit and deny my creativity.
Yeah.
So that's like, I don't know if there's static there, but I think, honestly, I think a rivalry is healthy for anyone.
I don't disagree with that. I guess I'm just, it's got to be a rivalry premised upon the right things. And obviously people are petty, people are insecure. Like there's a million reasons to be.
You don't think taking money out of somebody's pocket is the right thing to start a rivalry?
Oh, you mean if from the Olivia perspective? No, I agree. I'm saying the other direction. Ah, yeah.
I see.
No, that's authentic.
But I think feeling threatened is also...
Yeah. No, I guess
it's a valid cause.
I don't necessarily think everybody has to get along all the time, but Olivia and Taylor to me seem like natural allies. If anything, because the age difference between them. Like this is not like you shouldn't smite your child, in essence.
And look, maybe they're fine.
Behind the scenes. We don't know.
But I would be shocked if we get through Guts, the Olivia Rodrigo album, with no allusions to being threatened for credit.
What if Vampire's about Taylor?
This This was my guess coming in.
I know. I remember we talked about it.
When I saw the title of the song, I was like, if she takes a swing out of the gate at Taylor Swift while Taylor is on top of the world, it's World War III.
Yeah. But
we're not there yet. Not but we there. Might get there Could this get summer. There. You know what calms a hot summer?
Wow.
A milkshake. Happy birthday, Grimace.
I often wake up and first thing I say, happy birthday, Grimace.
you're sure it's like, it's not quite purple, but no, it's not a nod to Grimace.
If I spilled something on it, I didn't want it to be an obvious stain. In the meme ecosystem,
TikTok is zooming right now.
So, okay. And it's funny because when you had mentioned this to me the other day, I said I hadn't seen it, but I had seen it. I just didn't understand it was part of a larger thing.
I
had seen it a couple times in like very disjointed ways, but I hadn't like pieced it together in the main thing.
That's interesting because the part of this I'm most interested in, we're talking about, okay, it's Grimace's birthday. McDonald's is selling a meal. This is not sponsored.
This is earned media.
Yeah, it's earned media and it is social news.
Yes.
They're selling a meal as they did with Travis Scott and BTS, except it's Grimace.
They should have done Travis Scott meal, same memes.
Yes.
You actually said Cardi meal, same memes.
Same memes. Okay, along with the Grimace meal comes a purple milkshake.
That's what I think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A purple milkshake.
Yeah.
We're gonna get back to that.
Yeah, yeah.
Somehow, a TikTok user decided to make what is essentially an independent horror film about
drinking
the milkshake. And of course, as people do, they iterated.
It's off to the races.
The conceit, I guess, is that the Grimace shake kills you.
Or maybe Grimace explodes inside of you and then has to be...
We didn't talk about our interpretation.
Expelled, maybe? Terrible things. Like, basically things that would make you the subject of an investigation on True Detective Season 4 happen to you if you drink the Grimace shake.
And you would think this might be bad press. But in fact, it took over. And it took over... not only TikTok, but of course, TikTok memes then populate on Twitter IG and on Reels, Instagram,
yeah.
And people refer to them. And then it becomes a whole universe very quickly. And some of these memes got so advanced.
You think it's organic. Like, obviously, nothing's totally organic. But do you think on a fundamental level, it started organic?
I don't think McDonald's is smart enough to come up with this tidal wave of attention. And this is how I feel most of the time. With memes that end up selling products for corporations. If the corporations were this smart, they would just do it every time.
Yeah, no, that's true.
And this has the feel of something ground up. Like, is it astroturfed a little bit? Like, are they tending the fire? Like, are they, you know, throwing coals?
Yeah, sure.
To keep it going? Maybe. But the best ones of these are good on their own. My question is, like, sure, they're creatively made.
Yeah.
They are entertaining to watch. And maybe this is the adbusters in me, but like, are you still a little bit queasy about the idea that like, we're all just doing...
watching McDonald's commercials?
Yeah, we're all just...
Making McDonald's commercials. Yeah. Can I be sort of like a... like both Marxist and an aestheticist at the same time? Is that allowed?
We've been trying
for decades. For decades. I'm making a commercial right now for Quarter Snacks, for Jordan, for Real Tree Camo. You are not.
No logo.
Sorry, Naomi Klein. Naomi effing Klein over here.
I'm wearing Nikes.
Okay, congratulations. Phil Knight thanks you. Real shoe dog over here. I think that the way that we communicate to each other through symbols is so interwoven with the functions of consumption that I don't make those distinctions anymore. And I often think that a lot of these brand, like, what's the difference between like a Grimace meme and a brand activation? Brand activation is like visited upon you. A Grimace meme is like you take it and make something with it. Now, is the end result sort of similar? Yeah, the end result's sort of similar. But I like the idea that the narrative through lines of these memes are, in a way, hostile to the branding. They're
true.
Hostile to McDonald's, they're hostile to Grimace, or they're painting Grimace as an adversary.
As a villain.
Let me ask this. If Grimace was hiding on this set to come and get us, where would Grimace be hiding?
I don't even want to know. The snack cabinet is the answer.
Okay.
But some of these, as we said, like extremely high production value homemade. I mean, very much as a lot of TikTok is a throwback to the Vine days where you feel like this is, you know, at its best, it's filmmaking.
Yeah.
There's the one.
And also real Blair Witch Project energy.
Yeah, there's
a lot of
the
these.
One, okay, with the woman and it starts
pouring out of her nose.
How is it?
Oh, that's actually pretty good. It's.
Really? You all right? Hey, you okay?
I feel weird.
Great makeup work. I don't know. What do you call that? Production design? Leslie? I don't know. The other place this question is coming up a lot for me in the meme ecosystem and the pop cultural world is with the Barbie Oppenheimer memes, which I think much more so, especially on the Barbie side, started from a corporate level, was very top down.
Sure. You know, the Barbie rollout has been, wow.
Intense.
Put these people in charge of everything. Education, like the military, like unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And it began with the character rollout, you know, here's...
Hopcast Deluxe.
you call us.
Call us, please.
Send a memo.
Yeah.
It started with the character rollout where it was like, so-and-so is this kind of Barbie.
Right.
Like, here's Ken. And then...
Not to be confused with the idol rollout of like the Mitch Modes post on the weekends. It's great. Wait, sorry. Couldn't get through another week without idol mentioned. Yeah.
We're going to miss it.
Yeah.
RIP to the idol. And then you had people putting in their own faces, their own sorts of, you know, what kind of Barbie are you? What kind of Ken are you? He's just Ken, whatever, that stuff. And that was all very corporate, but it's morphed in this weird way, and it's morphed alongside Oppenheimer, the Christopher Nolan movie that's coming out the same day, which has a much different vibe.
Premise,
about the Manhattan Project, and also is not trying that hard in terms of viral marketing campaigns, but they've become inextricably linked to the point where, you know, it's Barbie girlfriend, Oppenheimer boyfriend. Or vice versa. You know, are you goth or are you pink? Like all of these conversations. And to me, it really hit its apotheosis. Like it really all came together with one of my favorite memes of the year so far, which is, you know, they put a Barbie house in Malibu. Of course they did. This
big
budget
big
is insane.
Yeah, it's truly.
Truly insane.
Probably spent as much on the house as on much of the film.
Yeah. Shout out to Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach. But it's an Airbnb, of course, because of course it is.
We'll be filming from there next week.
Yeah, and you know, that house went viral on its own. Here's the Barbie dream house. Here's the aerial shot of it.
Big old pink house on the hillside.
And then you get the quote tweet that's like, the Oppenheimer marketing team has the opportunity to do the funniest thing of all time, which in itself is an online trope that's having a lot of juice right now. The funniest thing of all time. I love it. This is perfect. You can't fake this. Like, this is the thing. The corporations can start the ball rolling, but they can't control where it goes.
Yeah. I mean, this is... I'm going to forget who wrote this, but there was the sort of history of brand Twitter that came out a few months ago. And obviously one of the things that corporations struggle with is how to have like an authentic but fun voice on the internet, which is like a terrible thing and no one should do, but everybody does it. You know, we saw Entertainment Weekly did something the other day, just sort of like, hey bro, just like the tweet and keep moving. Like, you know, rather than fighting about whatever the thing was fighting about. So this is something that's crucial to how companies, brands, creative, and business entities present themselves on the internet. But one person or a team of five people sitting in an office is never going to be faster, better, sharper than a bunch of like 17-year-olds wilding out on the internet.
And excited about making horror movies on TikTok.
You're never going to be better. And even if you're good, you're only going to give those folks the fire to be even better and faster and sharper and funnier.
And it is funny to watch the corporations try to play catch up. Like, you've seen McDonald's reference now the Grimace memes, like, because it's too big not to. So there's one post that's like, you know, a photo of Grimace and it's like me pretending I don't see the Grimace TikToks or whatever. And it just
fire like, your social person.
At the same time, as with Barbie and Oppenheimer, which like, look, I'm probably going to see a double feature. Like, I don't do that. I don't see two movies in one day, but like, this is what the world is going to do. Like, I want in on that. And like, we might see their opening weekends get a boost from it.
Sure.
Grimace Shake. Like, did these make you want to try the Grimace Shake?
I think maybe the overlords are telling us that this is the snack of the week.
I think this has to be the snack of the week.
Okay. We're usually a late in the show segment, but I suppose we are being pushed in this direction. So shall we?
I think we have to. But first, I have to be a little bit honest with the podcast family and say that I am on day 4 of a month-long cleanse, which includes no dairy and no artificial sugar.
Wow.
I feel great.
Pray for Joe.
I feel great, but I am so devoted to journalism and to snack reviews, specifically to the snack of the week, that I am going to take a couple sips of the Grimace Shake because I'm scared I might never get the chance again.
We'll pray for your stomach.
Thank you. Ready?
Not really.
I feel like I've tasted this taste before, but I can't place it.
It's a lot more viscous than I was expecting.
We should say that the first McDonald's we went to, again, not sponsored, the first McDonald's we went to was sold out, not only of the Grimace Shake, but of the Grimace birthday meal.
Yeah, they were just, it was on the menus, because now McDonald's is not a restaurant. It's all just a menu. Screens. It's all touchscreens. You couldn't even click it as an option. It was just gone. And then we had to go to another McDonald's.
We went to two
thankfully,
McDonald's.
We're in Times Square, so there's ample McDonald's to go to. I feel like I can taste it like in the back of my head.
I don't know if it's just because I haven't had artificial sugar for 4 days, but it's the sweetest thing I've ever tasted in my life.
It's really sweet.
It's like berry flavored, I guess, or the purple is just forcing me to think that it's berry flavored.
Why is it chewy?
All right. I think I've remembered what I'm being transported back to childhood.
Okay.
You remember like a Flintstones push pop? Sort of like sherbet thing.
Yeah.
That's what it tastes like to me. I do not want this. I do not want it.
I don't dislike
it. It's a 2 out of 10 for me. It's gross.
It's a gross 7 for me. Unlike last week where I was like, I don't like it, but I'm not going to have it. Or rather, I don't like it, but I'll probably have like, this is like, I kind of like it, but it's the opposite of last week.
The Dunkaroos.
Yeah, it's like Dunkers were 6.5 last week where I was like, I wouldn't like ordinarily, it was too dusty, but I will finish it. This is like a 7 where I'm like, I like it, but I know I shouldn't finish it.
Ugh. I just.
It's real heavy. It's real heavy, even after sitting in the fridge for, you know, 30 minutes or whatever. Like, this is a planned thing.
Now I see why the meme is spilling it all over the place. We had to keep the Grimace Shake safe in the work fridge before we filmed today. And now I sort of regret writing this post-it because if someone would have taken the Grimace Shake, it would have been their own fault having to drink it. You know, that would have been the punishment.
Oh, I thought the imminent death would have been the punishment. Fine. Should we palate cleanse with a viewer question?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be able to forget how that shake tastes.
It's genuinely like, if you could access the flavor that's happening here on the back of my neck, it's still that. Is there like a spinal tap or something that can extract that?
I don't know enough about the
science,
nervous system.
The CNS. Okay, we get questions. We get them in YouTube comments. We get them in the podcast email, podcast@nytimes.com. I'm checking the Discord listener mailbag channel. So put some stuff in there. This comes from YouTube comment from last week, I believe. Question for Joe. although really it's for both of us. Garrett Clayman. Shout out Garrett, who I met at a Flo Milli concert, I think. I
mean, and at Popcast Live.
At Popcast Live, but also at a Flo Milli concert at Irving Plaza. Garrett says, rank the Hills girls in terms of who you would most want to make a comeback into it girl culture.
Low, 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 low.
That's it. Five for five. Five for five. Look, for many years, I probably would have said Whitney.
Do you miss Whitney?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was... Whitney was the sleeper hit on that show, obviously.
Whitney Port. Yeah. Shout out.
But Lowe as well. I wrote many, many, many years ago, we should see if we can find the script, a defense of Lowe for the LA Times.
Great like friend.
In the mid-2000s, I wrote a defense of Lowe.
Great friend.
And Lowe is out here running like a beauty company, wellness company, maybe just got into Walmart or something like that. I think on TikTok I saw something along those lines.
Not sponsored. Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations. There's nothing here.
Obviously, Emily Weiss, the super intern, does not count because she's already an It Girl. So she can't return to It Girl status, right?
I mean, who are the other options, right? Let's
Audrina.
Heidi Montag.
Justin Bobby. That's an It Girl.
That's the real answer. Who else? Stephanie Pratt?
I mean,
Stephanie or Spencer?
I just want to do 2 seconds and say Kristen Cavallari is thriving.
Tell me.
She doesn't need our help.
Is that true?
She's divorced.
I'm not dialed in.
She has her
brand. She was married to a football player, right?
She was married to a football player, no longer.
Okay.
A mom. She's doing a lot of powerlifting.
Really?
She's working out like crazy. She did this podcast with Steven from Laguna Beach where they rewatched the whole series.
Wow.
It just ended.
Was it good?
I mean, to hear them recount the Cabo trip with 20 years
of perspective.
Of perspective and the fact that they still have the chemistry that they had as teenagers.
Damn.
It's like Kristen, like,
damn, I'm slipping. I need to get
Kristen
on that.
Kristen Cavallari. Queen of reality television, like Bethany Frankel, who? Yeah.
So the answer to this is low, correct?
I think it's got to be low.
It's got to be low. And also, like, Whitney seems to be doing really well, according to Instagram. And, like, I feel like the family life that Whitney's having, no need to come back to It Girl Call. Like, you're doing great, doing great. But I think low never really got the full moment to shine in any context.
Yeah.
Might be now. Let's go.
I think we could do a whole version of We Didn't Start the Fire about MTV reality stars.
It would be better than the version of We Didn't Start the Fire
that came out last week.
This podcast is supported by the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Okay, so Fall Out Boy, a band that I have interviewed.
What year? Was I in high school or college?
Blur that out. Fall Out Boy did a version of We Didn't Start the Fire with all new lyrics, covering the years 1989 to 2023. A lot of things happened. Now, I do want to open this by saying if you are the intern who was tasked with assembling the master list of things that happen from 1989 to 2023, would you be Deep Throat and send us the full long list?
Oh, you want the spreadsheet with everything that got cut?
Yes.
And how did Captain Planet become the first lyric?
I want to know. This is what I'm saying. I want to understand a little bit of the making of.
Diary of a Song? Should we do it?
If you must.
I might have to. Might have to bring it all back just to... the episode would be 45 minutes long.
Crimean Peninsula.
Lancelot, Cambridge Analytica.
How much of it do you know?
No, that's the only one. That really stuck out to me.
Harry Potter, Twilight, Michael Jackson dies?
Actually, it's Michael Jackson dies. Like, it's weirdly spaced, the syllables. So, okay. When I first heard this, I was actually shocked that Blink-182 didn't get to it first.
Well, you know who got to it first? The 1975.
Fair. Yes. It's Matty Healy Weekly over here.
Look, Love It If We Made It has already been crowned the modern We Didn't Start the Fire. Arguably a better song than the original. I'm not a Billy Joel guy. Obviously, I can't take away its cultural credibility.
Nor the sort of like raw chaos that of like when it dropped. Like, I am in fact old enough to remember when that song dropped.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Take me back.
Yeah, no, but the thing that was so striking about it, it doesn't fit into like known formats. So there's...
Yeah, it's not music.
Right. So there's this sense of like, is this incredible? Is this a complete rewiring of pop music? Or is this just a man shouting about nothing? Now, the original, sort of in chronological order, I don't know. I'm not going to like put years next to all the lyrics, but it's roughly 50s to 80s, if I'm remembering correctly. This...
All over the place.
Bro, what are you doing? Genuinely, what are you doing?
Kim Jong-un, Robert Downey. Iron Man?
Also, like, what came after? Like, they mentioned George Floyd, then something terrible, Metroid, comes after?
George Floyd, Metroid is one of the most unfortunate rhymes that I've ever heard in music. Look.
This is, when you do it for the memes, sometimes this happens. Do not do it for the memes.
I saw a couple people on Twitter saying that Fall Out Boy had gone full Weezer. Spot on. I mean, I can't say it better than that. In terms of doing it for the meme, like, why is the only thing I can say. I'm not a Billy Joel guy. I'm sorry to Karen Gans, our boss. I apologize.
You humbly submit yourself.
And I'm on record on Popcast Deluxe saying cover songs are fine. Anybody can cover any song, but I just don't want to ever think about this again.
It's a savvy move from a band that is not in the conversation to guarantee that the type of people who dictate what the conversation is will talk about them. They could have done a cover or an alternate version of almost anything. Like when we talked about Fast Car, I don't think loads of people are talking about Fast Car. It's a popular song, but it's not necessarily a discourse record. Fall Out Boy is savvy enough to know that they need a discourse record. That's what this is. That's what it's tragically, it exists to be talked about on Popcast Deluxe. Thank you.
We fell into the trap.
Songs of the week. Let's go.
Yeah, let's talk about real music.
Yes. You go first.
All right. I've got a song by V's.
Yeah, V's. Great.
Cult hero, Detroit rapper, one of a big wave in the last five-ish years of Detroit guys putting out an insane amount of really special, really funny, really original music, mostly on YouTube. This is V's first album, Ganger, since he really caught on among an underground rap fan on the internet. Much anticipated. This song is called G-A-I-G, Good As It Gets. It's on the back half of Ganger, this new album that came out last week. Incredible beat selector, V's. Incredible mumbler, low-key punchline guy. He really
slithers the syllables together.
It's almost like lo-fi rap, but not in a way that it's not the ethos of
it's not
the music.
It's not self-conscious in that way.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's raw and it's funny and it's smooth in its way.
I wanna take you to friends and kiss you in French. I wanna show you how cold and deep my heart is, like we ice fish. I just want folks to know I'm jeans like Kanye document. I'm on road to rich, so ain't nobody riding with me. Girl, I'm G-I-G, I'm good as it gets. I'm G-I-G, even though I made you rest in my sleep.
Okay, now, Sampha's back.
Sampha is back.
Okay, so I hadn't quite realized this, but it's been 6 years since they haven't put out solo music. Don't totally know what Sampha's been doing, but there is a new song. It's called Spirit 2.0. Came out last week. The thing that's interesting to me about Sampha is there's always been a little bit of a tension because of the particular contours of his voice.
Incredible, one-of-a-kind voice, no matter what the replacements want you to think.
Right. Like, it is a powerful, bottom-heavy warble. It's sort of achieves this kind of, like, physical heft that's also, like, impossibly sweet at the same time and also tragic. He's doing all that at the same time. When you have a voice that's that signature, you kind of can't do a lot production-wise to it. It's tough. The voice got to be the star. This song does a good job of like building a little bit of a bass around him that's a little bit more ambitious than what happened on the last album without overpowering or kind of drawing away from the peculiar strengths that his voice has. So this might indicate that they have unlocked some next level for what Sampha can do. So let's check it.
Lying in reflections, moonlight hits your skin, safe in conversation, you question where.
Thanks for watching Popcast Deluxe. Every podcast ever is at nytimes.com/popcast. The video episodes are on youtube.com/nytimes. It's the popcast.myshopify.com is where you get the merch, the t-shirts, and the stickers. Email us, popcast@nytimes.com. Get in the Facebook group or the Discord, tinyurl.com/popcastfacebook/popcastdiscord. Subscribe to Popcast anywhere you get your audio content, and that will include audio versions of this show as well as regular Popcast anywhere you get Spotify, Apple, et cetera, et cetera. Our director/producer is Leslie Davis. Thank you to Karen Gans. Thank you to Pedro Rosado. We'll be back next week.